Hey, I'm Bob Runkle, and for as long as I can remember, I've loved pop culture. Despite the challenges I've faced in my life, pop culture has always been there for me. I love talking to people and being a platform for others to share their thoughts, stories. Because if there's one thing I never get tired of, it's seeing driven, talented, and inspiring individuals follow their dreams, no matter what obstacles are in their way. And I know a thing or two about that. Welcome to the DJ Bob Show. I'm DJ Bob. Roll it. Remembering Paul Rubens today, the versatile actor behind the iconic character Pee Wee Herman, as well as featured roles in Mystery Men and Blow. But let's be honest, the world grew to love him from things like the Pee Wee Herman Show and Pee Wee's Playhouse. And there's no better person I would want to have on to talk about Paul and Paul's legacy and career than my friend, Kasheen Gaines. He crafted the brilliant pop culture book, Inside Pee Wee's Playhouse, in 2011, sharing stories with the cast and crew behind the beloved series. But I talked with Kasheen about his complicated relationship with Paul, being a fan, and then working with him professionally, indirectly, for this book. And a lot of stories are shared, and it's a real informative chat, a lot of stuff I didn't know, so I hope you learned something too. And we will never forget Paul Rubens and the creative genius that he brought to the world. Enjoy this episode. First of all, would you kind of introduce yourself and kind of give a little bit of an elevator pitch of who you are and what you've done over the years?
Sure. So my name is Kasheen Gaines. I am an author. I'm an educator. I'm a pop culture historian, writer, journalist, whatever you want to call it. And I've written a number of books over the last 12 years or so, I think, and books on Back to the Future, The Dark Crystal, a Broadway show called Shuffle Along, E.T., A Christmas Story. And my very first book was a book called Inside Pee Wee's Playhouse that came out in 2011. And I'm super proud of that book. And it will always be my first baby. And so, that's who I am.
And that first book is really why we're here today, because as we're recording this week we lost Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman himself. And we could be candid here, you kind of have a complicated relationship with, you know, your kind of view of him as a kid and as a fan versus working with him and people connected with him for this book. Could you kind of explain that kind of complex, you know, those thoughts that go on?
Yeah, so, you know, first and foremost, you know, literally my earliest memories in life are connected to the Pee Wee Herman character. I remember being in my crib watching Pee Wee's Playhouse. I was born only 9 months before Pee Wee's Playhouse debuted on CBS on September 13th, 1986. And so I grew up as a kid, you know, literally watching not only Pee Wee's Playhouse, but also Pee Wee's Big Adventure, Big Top Pee Wee was the first movie I saw in the movie theater, which is crazy when you think about how young I was that I was in a movie theater. My mom, to this day, I think is still upset that I slept through most of it because I was like 2 years old. But, you know, in the same way, sometimes when I think back about it and I go like, my goodness, like, how do I have such strong memories of loving this character? But I, as a kid, especially, but I think when you're a kid, you do know what you love. You know, you can see 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds today that really are into whatever it is that they're into. And that's all they want to talk about. And that's all the things they want to play with. And that's all the clothes they want to wear, whether it's Bluey, whether it's Blue's Clues, whether, you know, whatever the case may be. And I know as a pop culture guy, you know, you can relate to what I'm saying. So,
yeah.
So it's an interesting thing because I was 5 years old when Paul Reubens had his first sort of, you know, public incident. And then the Pee Wee Herman character disappeared. It was no longer on TV. It was no longer in toy stores. It was no longer fun or cool, or even in some cases, you know, it was considered like inappropriate almost to be a Pee Wee Herman fan, which is kind of crazy. And for decades, I think not only me, but a bunch of kids like me that grew up in that generation, you know, we always had this sort of like love for the character, but in some ways it was kind of maybe a secret love for the character, just something. There weren't outlets to sort of express it. It's not like today where there are lots of fan conventions and cosplay opportunities and online communities, you know, that didn't exist really in the early 90s. So the Pee Wee Herman character really went away. And it wasn't until 2009 that Paul Reubens brought back or announced that he was going to bring back the character in a way that the public can really engage with. So long story, a little bit shorter. I ended up reaching out to a bunch of people that were associated with Pee-wee's Playhouse, similarly to like you do with the podcast. You know, you reach out to people that had an impact on your childhood, and I did the same thing. I reached out to a bunch of people, and a lot of people agreed to speak to me about their time working on, whether it was Big Adventure, Big Top Pee-wee, Pee-wee's Playhouse. And at some point, someone suggested, you know, if you want, I can talk to Paul Reubens for you. And I took them up on the offer, and Paul Reubens really wanted no parts of this book that was developing. And, you know, I didn't speak to him directly about the book before it was published. But I spoke with, you know, there were lawyer's letters back and forth. I spoke extensively to his manager/publicist, I think. And I spoke to people at his company. And, you know, the basic attitude, I think, was that Paul Reubens was in control of the Pee Wee Herman character, and he didn't want anything out that had to do with Pee Wee Herman at all, unless he was involved. And so obviously, you know, I would have been happy to have his involvement. Everyone would have, but he also didn't want to be involved. So in that case, then, if he didn't want anything out that he wasn't involved with and he didn't want to be involved, then he was basically saying, I don't want the book to exist. And I will say, as a fan, it was challenging, you know, because he is someone that was such a formative figure in my growing up. I mean, so much of my sense of humor, my personality, my things that I say come directly from, you know, phrases that I use all the time come directly from Pee Wee Herman. And so, you know, it was challenging, but I proceeded on with the book, I guess, for two reasons. One is so many people that worked on the show had great, great stories to tell, and I wanted to be able to tell them or to convey them, to, you know, retell them in the book. And the other thing is I just had this true belief that once the book was released, he obviously would see it and he would appreciate it. He would like it. He would understand that it wasn't anything that was going to dwell on any of his, you know, personal life or anything like that, or anything too far out of the scope of the Pee Wee Herman character. It was really going to be very centered on the show and his career professionally. But unfortunately, that didn't really come. You know, I had spoken to people that had worked with him on the show, and they had sort of alluded to, you know, Paul's feelings about the book. And they were, you know, no one said that he had any sort of negative impression of the book once it was released, but I never heard from him in any sort of way. And there were attempts to sort of reach out, and you know, they went unresponded to, or in some cases, you know, not positively responded to. So it's challenging. You know, celebrity deaths are always weird because we have all sorts of connection points to celebrities. We invite them into our living room. We quote them. We imitate them. We idolize them, you know, and so it does hurt sometimes when there is a celebrity that you really have an affinity for who passes away. And the death of Paul Rubens really does hurt. But it's also sort of, it's tied up in the fact that I did this book really out of adoration for him and his character that led to me having sort of a very odd professional, I guess, relationship with him and his people over the course of the last decade and a bit.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there an issue with the cover too?
Yeah, so I think that was all a part of it. You know, at one point we
had, I don't want to air dirty laundry. I just remember
that. Yeah, no, that's so. At one point there was a. I mean, there were all sorts of little things, and I think that we made a lot of overtures to Paul Rubens and his people to try and make sure that he was as comfortable and happy with the book as possible. So an example of that, you know, we did let his team read the entire book before the book was out, and they, you know, they gave some feedback that we applied. So he did, you know, he did know what was coming out in the book before the book was out, or he and his team. And also one of the things that they wanted to make clear was that the book was not authorized by him. And so the original cover, they asked for us to change, and we did change it. And so that was a part of it as well, for sure.
And when you and I met, the book had already been out, I think.
Yeah.
For like 2 years, something like that.
Yes. Because we met, it was for A Christmas Story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between A Christmas Story and Pee-wee and the fact that you're doing events with these people now and you're doing all these promo things. And so there's part of you kind of think about, like, what if that happened with this book?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, I keep going back to my main sort of goal with this project was that I wanted nothing more than Paul Rubens to be involved. I mean, that was always my goal. You know, Paul Rubens has, you know, in case you or your listeners don't know, I mean, he is amazing with his fans. I can't stress that enough. He is, you know, for a long time, I actually met him once in 2004 at a DVD signing for when Pee-wee's Playhouse was first released on DVD. So it was in New York City at FYE, right by Radio City Music Hall. And I took the train up from college to go just to New York just for this one event, this one day. And he was wonderful, my gosh. I mean, he spent so much time talking to everyone in the line. It was supposed to be maybe a 2-hour signing or something. And I was way back in the line. And at some point I was like, oh my goodness, I think I should just leave because I'm never going to get in. He stayed probably 3 or 4 hours after he was supposed to leave because he was taking 5-6 minutes with every single person, you know. And even if you've been to any sort of fan convention, book signing, whatever, I mean, most people are, even if they make small talk, maybe it's 30 seconds. You know, it's not, he was, my goodness, so much time. And so I spoke to him. I let him know, you know, what an impact he made on my childhood. I don't remember exactly what the conversation was, but I remember it was a lengthy conversation. I have a picture of us from the event that I have not been able to find, but I know I have it. And he asked for my address. I gave him my address and he put me on his Christmas card list. And, you know, if you don't know, he gives out the most amazing Christmas cards every single, he gave out the most amazing Christmas cards every single year. They were all custom made, photoshopped with, like, sometimes he would be holding a menorah or like Pee-wee would be the star on the Christmas
tree. That's awesome.
You know, or he would be like inside, like it would be like a playhouse snow globe or something like it, just these amazing Christmas cards. And remember, he wasn't doing anything as the Pee-wee Herman character at the time. I mean, this was just, he was keeping the character alive for his fans through physical mailing of Christmas cards. And I was so excited every year to get these cards. I got them in 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, et cetera, until around the time I got started writing the book, you know? And so I really I know people that I've met in the Pee-wee fan community that would text with Paul Rubens, that, you know, he would, you know, message him on social media. I mean, he was really, really communicative. And even you could see, if you look at some of his posts on social media, he would respond to comments. And it would really be him. It wasn't just a team of people. It was, you know, him as well. And so I always hoped, thought that I would have book events with people from Pee-wee's Playhouse. And when I started writing it, of course, I'd hoped that I would have book events with Paul Rubens. I only did one book event, I think, with people that worked on the show. And they were with a number of animators. And maybe about 4 or 5 people. And it was great. It was a wonderful event. In fact, it was, I think, it might have been my first book event, like first or second book event. But yeah, I definitely, you know, the same sort of thing that you've seen me do with some of the Back to the Future cast members or Christmas Story. I've done things with the Hensons with the Dark Crystal book, and things with the cast of E.T., with the E.T. book. You know, I do wish I had that opportunity with some of the folks that worked on Pee-wee's Playhouse. I don't know if I'll ever have that, really. The other thing I kind of want to mention, though, is I do get it to an extent. Like, I don't want to make it seem like I don't get it. You know, I had never written a book before. And so I think now, today, I've written so many books. I've been kind of in the public sphere to some extent for the last dozen years. I think that there's more of a track record to show. And maybe if I was approaching Paul Rubens, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, asking to work with him on a book or to interview him for a book, maybe he would feel differently. But I don't think that I was in that position at the time. And I don't know if you feel the same way with your show, but, you know,
I was just gonna bring that up.
Yeah,
because it's always like there was a time where I would call these companies and I wouldn't, you know, get the time of day, and then the same people are talking to me regularly and doing all these things, and it's like you do have to prove yourself, and sometimes that's harder than, you know, doing the actual content itself.
Yeah, believe me, I know that you know, it is really challenging because I wanted to be able to kind of really prove that I came in peace and that I really was a fan. And but I just didn't have that chance to do that. And I never really was able to convince him of that. And I think to me, that's the part that is the most disappointing, is that I will never have the opportunity to sort of really communicate to him, or have him, or know that he knew that I came in peace and that I really was a lifelong fan, and that I really approached that book from the position of someone who wanted to celebrate his creative genius. And he was, you know, a little bit complicated, like everyone is a little bit complicated. I mean, he wasn't a flawless human being, but you don't have to be a flawless human being to make great art and to inspire people and to make people want to realize their own dreams. I mean, it sounds sort of corny, but I think so much of my imagination and my ability to create is because of Paul Rubens and Pee Wee Herman. And I owe literally the last, you know, dozen years of my writing career to him, not only because of the book, but also because of the inspiration and sort of the path that my life took ever since I was in the crib.
Yeah.
So a lot of feelings.
And it's really how I met you, because without that book, A Christmas Story wouldn't have happened.
Right, for sure.
One of the other things I wanted to bring up today is the obvious generation gap between us, because when I was born, Pee Wee was next to nothing, gone. And how I was exposed to the show was, I would say, in like 2006 when Adult Swim aired it. And, but, I'd seen Big Adventure before, but the show was a completely different beast in terms of quirky humor and kind of self-awareness. So do you think if Pee Wee's Playhouse was aired now, like it just premiered, would it have the same impact?
I think so. And I say that because I think so much of children's television now resembles what Pee Wee's Playhouse did.
Oh, it relies on it. It totally does.
Yeah, and Pee Wee's Playhouse was kind of the first show for that generation in the 80s to sort of do. I mean, if you think about it, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood had puppets, but the kind of hand puppets that were on Mr. Rogers are not like a giant talking window and a giant talking chair. And you know, it's just different. You know, there were other kid shows that mixed animation with live action segments, but not in a way where the live action characters would jump into an animated sequence like they did with the magic screen. And now, obviously, you know, Blue's Clues is a perfect show where that sort of blending of animation and live action is done all the time. You know, of course, that's the foundation of the show.
It's so funny. Steve even quotes his sort of inspiration for the male song going crazy like that at the end is essentially just a big giant Pee Wee Herman meets Grover from Sesame Street. And it totally makes sense.
I totally see it. Yeah. So I think that today, you know, I think that Pee Wee Herman kind of humor would always hold up today for kids. And I think there's something about having an adult who isn't just an adult who is a kid. I mean, this is the thing. And I, you know, a lot of people sort of, you know, is Pee Wee Herman a kid? Is he an adult? Is he? And I think for me, it was just so fun as a kid to watch an adult, someone who clearly was an adult, pretend to be a kid, or at least retain that childlike excitement and enthusiasm and even rattiness and obnoxiousness. I mean, you know, you can't get away with being a big obnoxious brat as an adult. But if you're Pee-wee Herman, you could be a big obnoxious brat and have a temper tantrum. And all of that was sort of fun. And I think kids today would love Pee-wee's Playhouse. You know, I always had this sort of fantasy that what I always wanted Pee-wee Herman to do later in the character's career was to have like a late night show. I always wanted him to do something almost like Jiminy Glick, where he would be in character and he could interview, you know, all the celebrities and just do it as Pee-wee Herman and have, you know, musical guests go on, but maybe they wouldn't be today's musical guests. Maybe they would be musical guests from, you know, like a Little Richard or Frankie Avalon, or, you know, that was always what I thought would be kind of fun for.
I mean, look at the Christmas special, for example. Like that that's exactly what you're saying. And it is, that would have been a great vehicle for the character, I feel.
Yeah. But it's it's life. I don't know how it's a circle of life, you know. It is sad. It really does feel sad to me, but I also feel like, my goodness, what a great legacy, what an amazing legacy to have left behind.
So what is your favorite underrated Pee-wee moment? Because everybody talking about Tequila and like all the fun. I know you are, but what am I? But what's the sort of like underrated moment that you wish people talked about more? Because I have one specific one later in his filmography that people should talk about more.
So Pee-wee Herman as Pee-wee Herman, right?
Like, yeah.
So I think my favorite,
maybe not underrated, but like something that not the sound bitey type stuff. Like,
yeah, I think so. All right. It's a little bit of a deep cut, I think, but I'm going to go there. So there's a moment. So Pee-wee Herman first sort of comes on the national scene in an HBO special in 1981 called The Pee-wee Herman Show, which he redid as a Broadway show in 2011. And that was something that it's geared for adults. It's like a kid's show before adults. It's not that it's inappropriate. It's just the humor is more adult humor. And it's an hour, but my goodness, it's like a jam-packed, hilarious hour. Phil Hartman is in it. Edie McClurg is in it. Lynn Stewart, of course, who plays Miss Yvonne. John Paragon is John B. the Genie. You know, it's just a great, it's the precursor to what becomes Pee-wee's Playhouse. And there's a moment, now the whole thing is worth watching. Like if you haven't seen it, it's on HBO Max. It is the funniest hour that you can spend watching.
It's great.
But what I really like is there's a moment where Pee-wee is doing like a musical salute with his next door neighbors, and they were real life, like kind of like punk rock, surfer rock duo called Rick and Ruby. And they do a Sly Stone musical medley, and Pee-wee is singing with them, and they all are doing it so seriously, but it's also so funny, and they sound great. And
it's so great.
Yeah, so that's probably one of my favorite moments. It's like a little 3 or 4 minute sequence, but I loved it so much. I would marry it.
Nice. Mine is absolutely ridiculous because it's from the Netflix movie.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like people don't give it a do. I forget the context of the scene, but he's at the dinner table and they asked him to say a few words. And he does just that. It's like fish, stapler, like really like. But that's the genius of the character. It's so off-center that you just get attached to it. And people that were not interested in that sort of weird off-center humor when Playhouse premiered got used to it because it was in the zeitgeist. And it's a shame that a lot of people, a network should re-air it or something just to pay tribute because it is so special.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And if you think about it too, even like the classic cartoons, like there was just so much celebration of nostalgia, you know, and even though Pee-wee was of the 80s, I felt it was like always nostalgic because they would have these classic cartoons. And you would have, like you mentioned with the Christmas special, you'd have these sort of figures that weren't totally contemporary, but they'd be mixed in with people that were completely contemporary, like Joan Rivers and Whoopi Goldberg and Magic Johnson. So I love that Pee-wee gets to live on forever in this space of being retro without feeling old, because I think it was always retro without necessarily feeling old, even when it was new.
Something that I really gravitated towards, you know, having a disability, is the idea of, you know, it's okay to be different.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to have a lisp. It's okay to scream real loud. It's okay to, you know, talk to your breakfast in the morning. Like, it's just, you know, it's okay to do the things that you do. And I'm sure, I haven't heard direct stories, but I'm sure Pee-wee helped a lot of folks within the disability community.
Yeah. And I think to me, that's my biggest lesson as well from Paul Rubens and Pee-wee Herman. It's that, you know, I think most people have something weird about them. Now, they don't always present it publicly. Maybe they don't like to admit it to themselves, but I think most people like things that are a little bit weird. You know, I remember, it's funny because my mother had a friend who had a child who I went to school with. Like, I didn't really know her, but she was like the daughter of my mom's friend. And at some point my mother would, like, maybe for like a couple months, my mother would drop her off to school. So her friend would drop off her daughter to our house, and then we would drive together to the same school. And she was maybe a year or so older than me, and she really liked watching Barney. And she, you know, but watching Barney was like little kid stuff. Maybe she was in fifth grade, I was in third grade. Like, she was already like, you know, too old for Barney. And I remember her saying, like, you know, before we leave in the morning, can we watch Barney? But like, don't ever tell anyone that I like to watch Barney, because, you know, she thought it was uncool. And I think most people have something about them that they think is uncool or
weird. I still have stuff like that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And, you know, when I say I owe so much to Paul Rubens, I mean it, because, I mean, if you think about it, I was a kid that grew up loving Pee-wee Herman and The Wizard of Oz and the Spice Girls and, you know, puppets and, you know, making silly songs and making silly short films. And I always, not necessarily, you know, it wasn't that I was, you know, picked on, quote unquote, for anything, but it was always like they were weird things about me, and I was kind of a little bit of a weird kid. I still am a weird kid as an adult, and so I have to laugh and love, because, you know, I've been able to, for the last 12 years, just like you have done with the DJ Bob show, you know, I've been able to celebrate and have my work be all of the weird things that I love. You know, I get to write about Howard the Duck and interview people that worked on that film. I get to, you know, it's like, it's a dream, you know? And I feel like if I had suppressed all of those things, yeah, I'm sure, you know, my life would go on. I'd still, you know, be fine. But how much better is it to be able to live in the celebration of what makes you weird and what makes you different, what makes you unique? And, you know, Pee-wee, what I always appreciated about that character is that Pee-wee was so weird and so unique and so different, but he had friends that treated him like he was like everyone, like he was just like, you know, a regular normal guy. You know, maybe they'd get annoyed with him because of things that he did, but not because of who he was. And that even in something like Big Adventure or Big Holiday, you know, or Big Top Pee-wee, he exists in the real world. And people don't say, why is this guy wearing a suit? Why does this guy have this voice? Why is this? People just sort of accept him and he goes about his business and he has, you know, he goes into a biker gang. I mean, the bikers don't like him because he's not a biker, because he knocks over their bike. They're not, you know, calling him names. You know, there's a difference. Yeah. So I just loved that because I think it just models to kids, especially kids. You will find your people. You will find people to appreciate you. You will find people to love you for who you are, and you don't have to change anything about yourself that you love. You don't have to change anything about yourself that you like about yourself. And that is, I think, a lesson that has impacted, you know, so many people that Paul Rubens gave us.
It's so interesting that you say all this, because when my fiance and I first met, I was talking to her about Blue's Clues, and I said, you know, I want to watch it, but it's too childish. We don't have to watch it. It's kind of embarrassing. Like, I'm kind of like, no, we're watching it whether you like it or not. It's like, because I was told, like, oh, this is just children's stuff. Like, there are adults making these things. There's no, like, there's no thing at the bottom of the screen going for it up. You know?
Right, like, right.
You know, it's like, it's, and so I totally get that. Like, embrace whatever it is. That is your thing. Yeah. And that's what Pee-wee really exemplified in all of us.
Yeah. It's the biggest, for me, it's the most important lesson that I learned from him, and one that I still hold very dear to my heart. You know, like I said, I never would have imagined, and I'm sure all of my friends and family, when I was imitating Pee Wee Herman and walking around with a Pee Wee Herman doll and doing his dance at all sorts of, you know, school events and family events and things like that, and just being totally obsessed with Pee Wee Herman. I mean, he was definitely my first obsession. I get obsessed easily, so I probably have had lots of obsessions over my life, but he was my first obsession. Never could anyone have imagined, I don't think, that I would be in a position to have worked with so many people associated with his show and worked with so many people associated with, and even have the opportunity to be in a dialogue with him and his team, even if it wasn't in the way that I wanted it to be. I still think it's amazing that the book comes out.
It's so cool when I got to talk to Craig Bartlett.
Oh, yes, Craig Bartlett. Yeah, yeah.
A year or two ago, we talked a lot about the Penny cartoon and his contribution to that, and the Pee-wee generation and the Hey Arnold generation really intersect. So if you grew up watching Hey Arnold a couple years earlier, you probably watched Pee-wee.
Yeah. And
it's such a cool, kind of, so many cool stories were shared on that call, because it was like, my mind was blown. Because when people hear that he he did the Arnold shorts on Sesame Street, or like the, and then it's on the Nick show. It's such like a mind blown moment for people.
Yeah. Yeah. And Craig was a great, I spoke with Craig for the book. I mean, so many amazingly talented people. And I felt this way when I wrote my Back to the Future book too, where like I was speaking to people that I loved because of Back to the Future. And then they also worked on Who Framed Roger Rabbit or Forrest Gump or all these, like, or Gremlins, or like they were, it was like people that had worked on all of these things from my childhood, you know, Lyle Conway, who created a lot of the puppets for The Dark Crystal, also created the Audrey 2 puppet for Little Shop of Horrors, the film.
And, I mean, okay.
I mean, just amazing, amazing people that I can't believe I've had the opportunity to even speak to or ask questions of, or just thank them even, you know, just like thank them for their work. And I do take some joy in knowing that whether or not he, you know, whether or not I ever got the confirmation that he received it well, I know that Paul Rubens at least heard from me directly on several occasions how much he meant to me, and that I take some real appreciation in.
The way I see it, Edge, is this: you created a book for people that were looking for a book like that about Pee-wee, and many of your other books too. It's like you're giving people that safe space, like this person gets it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I just want to thank you for, you know, taking the plunge and finding a publisher when you didn't know anything about the publishing world and just taking this leap. Because the worst they can do is say no.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up, what were some of your biggest hurdles aside from the obvious? What were some of the biggest hurdles and some of the biggest learning curves while writing this book?
I think the biggest hurdle was kind of just never having done it before. I mean, obviously, besides the Paul Rubens factor,
yeah.
The hurdle was just having never written a book before. And but besides that, I think everything kind of came really easily in a sense. Like I didn't initially know how to go about it, but the Pee Wee Herman story to me was always so fascinating in terms of, you know, what Paul Rubens' career was before Pee Wee Herman. Pee Wee Herman was sort of a character created out of, well, the character wasn't created out of desperation, but the idea to take that character and build a show around him was really created out of desperation. He wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. He got down to the final two, and they chose Gilbert Gottfried over Pee Wee Herman, over Paul Rubens for Saturday Night Live. And so literally on the plane ride back from New York, he said, you know what, I'm basically going to do my own show on Saturday night. And that became the Pee Wee Herman show. And so he just had such an amazing rise and fall and rise again. And I think crafting that story, it was the first time that I ever had to sort of learn how to tell a story through a book, as opposed to it just being like, here are a bunch of fun facts and here are a bunch of trivia points. And I guess a really specific answer to your question is, there was one time I got, I think it was like the flu, and I had a book deadline. And so I had to watch like 25 episodes of Pee-wee's Playhouse kind of back to back and take notes on all of them while I had the flu. And like, you know, Pee-wee's Playhouse completely, you know, like feeling well and sober is fine, but then like adding in like flu medicine and having like a fever and having like It's just like a lot. It was a lot of stimulus. So that's something I really remember very strongly, is I remember that I, there was maybe like a 3-day period where I had to watch like half of the entire series. And I was like, oh my gosh, man, do they have to scream every time they say the word? but only because I wasn't feeling well. So that's probably one of my own, but one of my, like a secret behind the scenes fact of the making.
That's happen. Like some fever dream you were having there. Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, quite literally.
I love it. So where can people check out this book? Where can people grab it? What's it called? We've alluded to it, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah. So the book is called Inside Pee-wee's Playhouse, and it is, believe it or not, I think Amazon is out of copies of it right now.
I know. I'm bummed. That's the only one I don't have.
Oh, but there. But,
but
I think,
I've read it.
I think we're getting some more in. I think we're getting some more in. So it's coming. And so if you go and just, you can check it out on my website, CasseneGaines.com, CasseneGaines.com. And you can just stay tuned to Amazon, because I think copies are going to pop back up there very soon. They're just out right now.
I'm so excited to see what you've got going on and your latest project. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to, you know, since.
Yeah.
Inside Pee-wee's Playhouse. A lot.
Yes. So as we said, you know, I wrote a book on A Christmas Story, Back to the Future, Dark Crystal, E.T., a book called When Broadway Was Black, about a 1921 show called Shuffle Along. And I'm working on a book right now, literally right this second. I'm not right this second, but right, you know, today, on a book on The Wiz, which is coming out for the 50th anniversary of The Wiz. And I'm so excited to be working on it. And it's going to be really, really special. So I'm excited that should be coming out in 2025 if all goes according to plan.
That's awesome. And you're pretty responsive on social media. So where can people find you?
I am at Cassine Gaines, CasseneGaines on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Threads now, and Twitter, or whatever it's being called nowadays. Whatever that is. It's still there, but yeah, whatever that is.
So my final question for you, we've had this conversation, and because we're really good friends, do you have a question for me that you would like to ask about any of the things that we've spoken about today?
Yeah, I guess I would ask you, and I know that we've talked about this offline before, but you know, when you were talking about embracing all the things that make us different and talking about, you know, your disability, do you feel like embracing who you are, or how do you feel like the way in which you embrace who you are? Because what I love about you is that you do so embrace all parts of you. How do you feel like that impacts your work, your personal life, and then also your professional life through the podcast?
Well, it's interesting because there are different ways of embracing your disability. There's the idea of being a poster child and wanting to inspire people. It's even to the point where, even on this podcast, I often say, like, I don't intend to inspire you, but just by saying that, I'm kind of like wanting, you know, somebody to feel something. But, and then there's just like, just being a voice for those that don't have one, or just having a disability, but still living your life. That's really how I embrace it. And in my personal life, it's just like, make fun of yourself and be okay with it. Because if you're bent out of shape about every thing that's said, you're not going to live a fulfilled life. I mean, trust me. I mean, my fiance has cerebral palsy, a visual impairment, like Crohn's disease, but it's like I've learned through those situations to just wing it. Not everything has to be pre-planned. Not everything has to be by the book. Just live like Pee-wee, really. Honestly, if we're going to bring it back to where we started, that's the way to do it.
I love it. I love that story. No, I love it. I love it. I appreciate you so much. And I really want to thank you for having me on. It's great to talk about someone who had such a profound impact on my life. So I appreciate you having me on.
And it's always great to talk to you just because we're friends. And I mean, even to the point where, like, I'll do an interview and you'll be the first to know after I tape, because I know you'll get excited about something or someone.
And I do. You've been killing it. You've got great, really great guests. I mean, I'm impressed. You're doing a great job.
Thank you so much. And we will talk soon.
All right. Sounds great. Take care.